This is Dr. Sheldon L. Aikens, host of the Leading Equity Podcast and a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. For more great podcasts, visit edupodcastnetwork.com. And get ready, because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Instant Relevance Podcast. The Instant Relevance Podcast is an educational podcast featuring the latest news and resources to make learning relevant for all students. Follow us on Twitter at InstantRel. And then you have two books. The first is The Zen Teacher, and then The Sanctuaries book. Do you have a third?
Right.
Improving your stage presence in the classroom. When did that one come out?
It's funny you mentioned that. Came out, I wrote that, and it came because I was a drama major and I spent 14 years learning acting. And I realized, you know, I kind of joke and say I do 5 shows a day.
Oh my gosh, me too. it's all improv shows. You just kind of got a skeleton and you go for the audience, totally. You know?
Absolutely, totally. So I wrote that and kind of put those two ideas together in 2001. And the thing I always tell Dave is that, you know, there was no social media and you know, I self-published it and it was like no distribution channels. So like my aunt bought 3 copies and that was like the whole thing, you know.
Well, that's kind
of, I still think it was a good book. Yeah. I still like what it had to say. And then some guy came out with this Teach Like a Pirate thing and, you know.
All of a sudden. Welcome to the Instant Relevance Podcast. We are excited to have a special guest with us today, Dan Tricarico. Dan is a guy I have known via Twitter for a little bit of time now. He is the author of The Zen Teacher, Creating Focus, Simplicity, and Tranquility in the Classroom, and has a new book that came out just this past December, Sanctuaries, Self-Care Secrets for Stressed Out Teachers. And above that, Dan's been an English teacher for over 26 years now in a suburb of San Diego, and shares those thoughts and those moments on Facebook and Twitter. And he has kind of been inspiring me a lot lately with the way he's been approaching his kids and his own family. And Dan, I want to welcome you to the Instant Relevance Podcast and give you a chance to tell us a little bit more about you and some of the things we don't know. And also, what's been you know, exciting your passion and driving you in this mode these days to really continue to teach passionately?
Well, thank you for having me. First of all, I really appreciate being here and looking forward to the conversation. What has been inspiring me and keeping my passion going? Well, I will tell you that when I started teaching and thought about teaching English, I already considered myself a writer. And the idea of talking about writing in books all day, I was like, sign me up. You know, that was just like the best possible job I could imagine. And 26 years later, nothing has changed. I still love going into the classroom and getting them excited about language and communication and just the way that a novel or a short story or a poem can wiggle into your heart and just kind of make you see the world a little bit differently, how it can cause you to have empathy for people. That's just the best thing in the world. And I can't imagine doing anything else.
So that's great to hear that even after 26 years of teaching, you are still able to find those relevant moments in students' lives that you're able to ignite through literature. We have 2 math teachers here, so you know, we might not be as enthralled with language and literature as you are, but could you maybe give us some kind of specific moments where you've seen that light bulb go off for kids by, you know, making language more accessible to them or, you know, maybe teaching them how to connect with other people through language?
Sure. And first of all, I want to say I know exactly how you feel, because if you ask my students, you know, the number thing is what's challenging for me. I've never passed out papers in the classroom and gotten it right. There's always like 5 extra or 2 short or something like that. But I there's one story I remember, and I've told it a couple times, but I'll never forget it. And I was actually subbing, and I was subbing at the school I work at now, and I've been there for 26 years, and I just knew that was the school I wanted to be at. And we were working on figurative language and similes and metaphors. And the girl I was trying to help, I was standing next to her desk, leaning over her, explaining similes, explaining metaphors. And she was just like, I don't get it. It's not making sense to me. And I was getting kind of frustrated. And I thought, oh, I'm terrible. I'm a terrible teacher. And then the bell rang and I thought, well, you know, that failed. That didn't work at all. And she was walking outside and apparently one of her friends or somebody took something from her or kind of some banter or some horseplay. And I heard her, she just yelled, "You give that back to me now or I'm going to bust your head like a melon." And I yelled out, "Tammy," and I ran out the door and I said, "That's it. You just did it. You just used a simile." And then, okay, now, and the light went on. And what was amazing to me and what I've seen for 26 years is that happened outside of the bells. That happened outside of the actual lesson plan. We hear about the teachable moment, and I just have always looked when you talk about instant, just relevance and instant relevance, it's like, that was happening right then, and I just had to make the most of it. So I just ran out there and I said, "You were doing it." And that was probably, I'm going to say close to, I was subbing. So it's before I had the job there, probably close to 30 years ago. And she and I are still Facebook friends, and she's just an amazing writer in her own right. So something went right after all.
That's the fun part. That's our opportunity. You heard her say that and you jumped in and said, wait, you just did it. Yeah. And I know plenty of teachers who will see a kid say or do something and they internalize it. They turn back and they're like, oh, that they kind of like bring it inside and be like, he got it. But they didn't say anything and you had a chance to.
Right.
And that's the subtitle of Instant Relevance. It's using today's experiences to teach tomorrow's lessons. And what you pointed out is that we so often deconstruct what we think we're supposed to be teaching to its component parts and then teach it to kids and wonder why they don't get it. And then all of a sudden they experience it instead. So, I mean, we look to find those ways that say, oh, how do we take what you've been doing or what you already understand and just extract what you're supposed to learn from it? It's like, if you believe Isaac Newton got hit in the head with an apple, it's not it's not because he already figured out gravity. It's because he finally figured out gravity. So the apple was allowed to fall. No, it was, we take the experiences and we learn from them and we approach them in that way. And I love language. I love writing. I've always enjoyed writing. My wife was an English major before she was a music major, and now she's a music teacher. And so a lot of what we do is very focused around literature and literary devices and writing as well. And that brings me to your writings, which is kind of interesting, because as an English teacher who cares deeply about kids, deeply about their ability and their desire to love writing like you do, you didn't write anything anywhere about any of that. the books that you have published through Dave Burgess Consulting, The Zen Teacher and Sanctuaries, are about something totally different. So what brought you to that aspect of your career that you wanted to share those visions?
Super easy answer to that. The short version is nobody's taking care of teachers. That's just the short version. And that's sad to me. And what happened was about 10 years ago, I had about 10 years left before I was going to retire, and I was heading toward burnout. And I saw some of the greatest teachers around me melting down and burning out and leaving the profession. And I thought, I can't do that. I have to make it 10 more years. I have to make it to retirement. In our department alone, we lost 3 teachers within the space of a few years. And I got really scared. And I thought, what am I going to do? And because I was a drama major, taking so many acting classes, the acting teachers talked about something called a relaxed preparedness, which meant that you were calm, but you were ready to go. You were relaxed, but you were ready to perform. And I said, well, that's what teachers need. So I started a blog called The Zen Teacher that was really just reminders for me, of how am I going to get through this? How am I going to calm down? How am I going to be in the moment, relax, use meditation, breathing exercises, all of these things that I was taught in the acting classes that I thought could really help me accept and be non-judgmental and be in the moment with the kids when all this other crazy stuff was going on, the testing machine that's out of control, the lack of funds, the enormous class sizes. I can't control any of that, right? But what I could do was take care of myself within the context of the classroom so that I could be the best teacher that I could be for the kids and not let any of that other stuff kind of be distracting me and you know, worry about that stuff. And so it just worked out that, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but Dave was a teacher at my school. That's where I know him from.
And he was a social science
teacher. Yeah, it was crazy. The story I always tell is it was nothing to be in the mailbox room going through my mail and look up and see Dave dressed as the Wicked Witch of the West, like for the Salem Witch Trials or Rosie the Riveter or something, and just go, oh, hey, Dave, how's it going? You know, and then go back to looking through my mail. That was just a normal day, you know, because he was pretty amazing that way. And then so, you know, I contacted him and I, you know, because he'd already left by then. He was doing the Teach Like a Pirate thing and just, you know, changing education. I mean, just, you know, he's a rock star now. But, he, you know, I said, I've got this thing I'm working on. You know, will you look at it when I'm done? And he said, yeah, sure, send it along. And when I was done, I sent it to him. And a couple weeks later, I got an email and he said, yeah, hey, let's do this thing. And I got to tell you, you know, he changed my life. He absolutely changed my life. And so the great thing is I've since then, that was 2015. I've been able to do workshops. I just did a video yesterday for a school in New Jersey about, you know, just how they can reduce their stress and improve their self-care. And I've been able to have a little bit of a ripple effect in taking care of teachers. And it's just not, otherwise I just didn't see it happening. And I realized it's up to us to take care of each other and ourselves. And so that's kind of where that came from. And what I say about the new book Sanctuaries is if the Zen teacher reminded you to take care of yourself, Sanctuaries shows you how, because there's lots of different strategies in both books, but especially in Sanctuaries. And I made it more like a workbook where there are activities, there's journaling pages, there's open-ended questions and reflective questions so that you can design your own sanctuaries that work for you because everybody's different. So that's kind of how it came about.
You said a lot of great things there, Dan. And
thank you.
No problem. You know, of course, I think the biggest thing you said there is nobody's taking care of teachers. That's a pretty bold statement. And really, I you know, wrote that down immediately and started really thinking about it while you were responding. And I think that teachers are so used to helping other people. I mean, just by the nature of the type of person who a teacher is
yeah.
They're so used to reaching out and helping other people and getting so involved in students' lives and doing and going the extra mile that I think we really do forget to take care of ourselves. I think that it seems so obvious that we need to take care of ourselves, but it's something that just because I think that there's this perception that, you know, teachers only work, you know, however many hours a day, they get these big vacations and everything like that, that, you know, I internalize those messages as an educator. And I tell myself that I can't take a day off unless it's a vacation day. And because of that, you know, family's compromised and everything. When, you know, if I had an office job, it'd be no problem to take a day off for a dentist appointment or, you know, to
of course
take a personal day, just, you know, to relax. And that actually brings me to a blog post I saw that I really liked of yours, was it was kind of an hour by hour play by play of a personal day. And, but it's funny because like I actually just took a personal day like that, like a mental health day. And it was really funny to see kind of your play by play. But I think that one thing that, you know, first teachers need to, you know, realize is it is okay. Even though we do get this vacation time, we're kind of, you know, it's this teacher stigma that, oh, you've got the summers off and everything like that. It doesn't mean that you can't take another day off anytime else in the year. And also I think that, there's this confusion sometimes where you say, okay, you know, we don't want to focus too much on the teachers because it's really about the students, but the connection between happy teachers and happy students, you know, is often lost, and it's something that we've talked about on the Instant Relevance podcast before. So I guess my question to you is you know, with kind of the messaging out there of, you know, teachers having this time off and having the summers off and, you know, the typical kind of falsities out there about the teaching profession, how do you kind of go through that and still advocate for, you know, teacher wellness when, you know, the general public sometimes already thinks that, you know, teaching is so easy?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a hard question, but my answer comes from some of the basic tenets of Zen, which is kind of acceptance and non-judgment, which is, I think what you said is very wise and very true, that teachers internalize the narrative that they hear about themselves. And so that's why it's important for me to come along and be just that little bug in your ear that says, it's okay, you can give yourself permission to take care of yourself, because we've heard all these other stories and internalized them. But the acceptance and the non-judgment comes from not letting all of those other stories impact what my decisions are. Another way to put it is, I heard this saying, and I think, you know, I just love it. And it goes like this: what other people think of me is none of my business. And so they can think whatever they want, but if I need a mental health day, I'm the only one who is the arbiter of that. I'm the only one who knows that I've reached my limits. I'm the only one who knows that I'm up to my eyeballs in stress and that I need to cut back and just take a mental health day. And we are entirely entitled to do that and to take care of ourselves. There's another saying, which I'm sure you've heard: self-care is not selfish. And I say self-care is healthcare. And, you know, you're going to prevent a lot of things down the road if you recognize the signs earlier that you need to take it easy and maybe take that mental health day. Because we focus on, oh, I have a cold, I'm going to stay home. You know, I have, you know, a sinus infection, I'm going to stay home. All these physiological things. But if you're feeling super stressed, taking some time to deal with that is going to, you know, circumvent and help prevent those other kind of physiological things. So it's super important that, you know, and that's why I did that blog post, because I knew I was getting there. And I just said, hey, you know, it was that long haul. I think it was in November, you know, when we have that long stretch of time. And I said, I'm just going to model this. You know, that's what teachers do, right? Is they model for their students what does this look like? And so I took the mental health day and I took notes while I was doing it. And, you know, like, you know, 10 o'clock, took a nap, you know, or whatever. And then I just wrote it up as the blog post. And I said, this is what it looks like. So don't be afraid. You know, it's okay if you recognize that you need the time. Just take it. You're worth it. And that's one message I really want teachers to understand, is that they're worth it and they're working super hard, and that they're not bad people if they take time, and that we need them in the profession. And taking care of themselves is one of the ways to sustain it. Because I, you know, as you said, teachers are givers, and they give and they give and they give and they give. And, you know, that old saying, you can't pour from an empty cup. And I say, teachers will not only pour from an empty cup, if the students or family member needs the cup, they'll give the cup to them too. And my job is to get you back your cup and then hopefully fill it up with some self-care.
Yeah. That's an incredible point that we need to remember. Even that blog post about the piece of, like, the days as you go through and what it looks like, because I'm fortunate enough that I have an administrative position in my school district that's a 4/5 position. So I technically have one day a week off, although that rotates when I have some weeks where, you know, I'm traveling or something like that. But I, you know, often those weeks are used to travel and speak to a school district or do professional development somewhere. Mm-hmm. And my wife, who was home with our kids for 13 years before going back to work as a music teacher last year, is in a part-time position where she works 3 days a week. And nice. Well, and I love your reaction, because the technical reaction is, it's actually just a full-time job with part-time pay. You know, but that's because we're treating it that way. When we look at it and say, oh, I got to work, I got to prepare, I got to spend 2 days preparing for Monday. Well, everyone else isn't spending 2 days preparing for Monday, you know, like, how are you building some time in for you? And when I look at my to-do list for my Monday off, when it's filled with materials and things that I have to do to complete tasks from work just so that I can catch up, then it's not a day off and it's not self-care.
Exactly.
For me. And so I was lucky enough in my last district, our superintendent, I'm going to shout him out here. His name is Dr. Mike LaSousa, and this is the school district of the Chathams in Chatham, New Jersey. He was very focused on teacher wellness. And there was we did official district-wide mindfulness training. And on our professional development days, we had a menu of options to pick from. And many of them included things like nature walks or yoga activities or things for our personal health, and those weren't looked down upon to take instead of, you know, organizing my math curriculum into units. So
see, that's very rare.
And it was rare. And I feel like he's ahead of the curve on that. And if he happens to be listening to this, to keep that momentum going. And I view it as that time when you're, you know, you're sitting on a plane about to take off, and you know, the flight attendant comes out, and if you want some metaphors or similes, like we were talking about before, you know, the flight attendant comes out and, you know, goes through the routines with you. You know, if there's an exit row, do this. If there's a thing, if the oxygen mask falls down, put it on yourself, and then put it, and then help your child.
Right.
Wait, I'm supposed to put it on myself first.
Yeah.
And that's then help the person next to me. That concept that if I am not taking care of myself, I physically won't be able to help anyone else. But the key is, they don't drop the oxygen mask before the plane takes off. They only drop it when it reaches a point that it's needed. And that health moment that you're talking about is, I don't have to, you know, constantly put people aside to be healthy for myself. But when I do recognize and have a self-awareness of the fact that I've reached a point where my stress is too high, or it's becoming anxiety or depression or really difficulty in my personal mental or physical health, I need to drop my oxygen mask and take care of myself first. And you should realize that I'm doing that for both me and you. So I really do like that metaphor and that that idea that taking care of yourself like is just, it's health, it's preventative health. And I wanted to jump back to something that I noticed. You know, I just kind of learning a little bit more about you, I went back to your Amazon page and I saw that you'd written a book in 2002 called You're a Teacher, So Act Like One. And you just mentioned that you were trained in drama and enjoy acting. And we kind of talked before the podcast started that you feel like, you know, when you're teaching, it's just five shows a day and you're putting on a show. And I totally connected with that because I felt like I was always acting in front of the kids, and you know, but you act as you and your best you. So I want to ask you a little bit about, you know, here it is, you know, 26 years later. How are you still using your drama and your acting as a tool for really engaging kids and making your classroom an exciting place to be?
Well, it's funny because when I think of the time that I spent as an actor, and I spent 2 years in Los Angeles pursuing acting, like the way that some people take a gap year or, you know, backpack in Europe, I spent 2 years after college in Los Angeles pursuing acting. And it was an amazing time, but it feels like another person. I personally am not that person anymore. I don't act anymore. But yes, you're right. All of those techniques that I wrote about in that book are still in play, are still things that I use, whether it's learning how to do a dramatic pause, or whether it's a character voice, or whether, I was talking about how Dave, you know, was big on costumes. Now, you would think a drama major would be big on costumes, and I'm just a little too shy to do that kind of thing. So, you know, you do where your comfort zone is. But I'm big on humor. I love jokes, and I spent a lot of time when I was in Los Angeles. I had several friends who were pursuing stand-up comedy in the big comedy boom of the late 80s, and I watched comedians, multiple shows surfing the crowd, same material, different crowds, and watching how do you adapt, how do you adjust, how do you tweak the language, how do you change the punchline, how do you change the delivery. I can't imagine better training for being in front of teenagers in a classroom. It was phenomenal, and I'm so grateful and so feel so lucky that I got to do that. So there's so many of the acting skills that come into play when you're up there every day. And it doesn't mean I'm always in front of them, you know, putting on a show necessarily, but there are those moments that are performance based, but also things that they teach you in drama, like listening to your partner and being in the moment. Though, you know, those are critical for creating relationship with students, making them feel like they're listened to, making them feel like, you know, you're there with them instead of worried about, you know, the papers that are coming in or your lunch meeting or something like that. And I learned all those in the acting classes. So there's all kinds of acting skills that help us as teachers.
Yeah, I think we're constantly giving a yes and to everybody here, you know, in my class. Exactly. Like a kid gives an answer that's not quite there. Yes,
sure.
And, yes, and, come on, and, yep. Give me some more.
Don't deny, I don't deny it.
Right, right. It's if your hands are up, you're slowing it down, and if they're out, you're bringing it in. So, no, I appreciate that. I think it's very cool that those devices are still there and that you recognize that they're a component of good teaching.
Sure.
I want to give you a chance then to share with our listeners where they can connect with you best, how they can find you, and what's the best way for them to learn more about you and your writing and your work.
Oh man, there are like a bazillion ways. So first of all, I'm always very accessible. I love hearing from people and helping them with their self-care because again, I feel like nobody's doing it. So I want to do what I can do. So people can email me at teachingzen@gmail.com. They can go find me on Twitter at the Zen Teacher. I'm experimenting with Instagram right now, and it's just at Zen Teacher because I guess the Zen Teacher was taken, but it's just at Zen Teacher. There's a Facebook page called the Zen Teacher. You can follow stuff that I put there. There's a Facebook group. If you want to search for the Zen Teacher Facebook group, it's a closed group that has nearly 1,000 teachers from all over the world. And we talk about self-care and stress reduction. And just the thing that's amazing about that group is they're just incredibly nice people and so supportive of each other. So we would love to have anybody in there who wants to be in there. And so I think that, you know, there's just a lot of ways to connect with me.
That's great because I know after our short conversation here, I'm excited to learn a little bit more and also just remind myself that it is an important part of our job is to serve other people, and we can't do that until, you know, we're serving ourselves. So I really appreciate you coming on and making sure that we're all keeping a lens on our mental and physical health as well. So I want to thank you for that.
That's awesome. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.